Blog Talk Radio.
With poetry. Happy Friday, everyone. Hope everyone had a great week, and I hope you all have a better weekend to follow. And let's see. Hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
All righty. What's happening?
You know, a little of this, a little of that, and a whole lot of nothing. You know, same as always. I do want to take an opportunity at the beginning of the show to offer our heartfelt sympathies to friends and family of John Coe. I found out this afternoon from Pam that John had passed away. So just so everyone knows, you know, you're all in our thoughts and prayers. And, yep, his poetry will live on, that's for sure. So thank you, everybody, for giving me that second chance to reach out. Other than that, Rex, you know, Friday, it's just another Friday, man. You know, I mean, and that's plenty to make it separate right there. Just lots of interesting, you know, things, weather, people, you know. What is new with you?
Dead. Weather's what it is. Ever changing.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. I don't envy you at all. No, no, no. High temperature is not my thing. But then again, it should be to, you know, ice and snow. I think, anyway. But, yeah. What a truth there. So, yeah. So, let's see. You said your temps were almost 100 today. That's outrageous in my mind. Here, yeah, nowhere near that bad, thank goodness. That's only bad if you can't tolerate it. If you don't tolerate it well. So, yeah.
Well, the heat's not bad. It's when you mix in a ton of humidity, that's what kills you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it seems we have a lot of humidity here. So, you know, I guess that's how I always base the fact I don't like hot weather. Because it tends to be humid a lot of the time. And, yeah, that just, yeah, that undoes me. I'm melting, you know, that kind of thing. Oh. I do that pretty well. It's kind of scary. No. So anyway, I don't know. But I guess. I guess we should get the party started. I'm not sure if when or who will be joining us this evening. And you know how that works, right? So I want to put up this piece by Versus Goliath. We have a good handful of carryovers from last Friday. And we'll see where we go from here. So I'm going to ask you to read this one for us, Rex. Thank you.
Okie dokie.
Mm-hmm.
Rock Bottom by Versus Goliath. Spin the block, flip flop, all the rage in underwater fashion. Wave hello to my neighbors, Tony and Bruno. They retired together. Isn't that nice? Don't get to see that too often nowadays. Loan sharks always too busy collecting debt. Never appreciate the few eyes they see. Brackish water bungalow, not much to see. Got a terrarium with amphibians. Hooked up some oxygen tanks so they can breathe. Bookcase is a little broken. The pages a bit soggy. All in all, not a bad place to spend one's eternity. Who said sleeping with the fishes had to be lonely? And on.
What a comical take. It was written for a contest. They sleep with the fishes. I think that he met that prompt, and it was comical. Comical and well done. Cinder Black Flip Flop had me right from the very beginning. What a great way to draw your reader in and have them want to read, you know, more and more into it. Clever. Yeah, very clever. Like the brackish wooded bungalow, not much to see. Got a terrarium with amphibians. Hooked up some oxygen tanks so they can breathe. Oh, gosh, you know, but great piece there, Voices, and I want to thank you for sharing that. It was a lot of fun. Good job.
Yeah, I like the bite and the humor in this, especially that first stanza, the sort of cinder block flip-flops. When you see the whale jumping out of the water and you got that huge, big splash as they come down to earth, the thought with my neighbors Tony and Bruno kind of drops into that idea of the Godfather tonight, sleep with the fishies. So, and I like that loan shark angle, too busy collecting debt, even though you hit on the sort of sharks always on the move, looking for something else to eat. But that second stanza bites through with the angle of humor, walking in that sort of thing. You can come down and view us too, but you better bring some tanks to help alleviate the fact you can't breathe down here without them. And then again, the last two lines walk right again back into that sort of the Godfather. There's a nice tone in it. Funny.
It does. I agree with that. You know, it's funny, but it's not silly, silly. Well, it is silly, silly, but it's funny, and I like that. I like the touch of humor in it, absolutely. Very enjoyable piece. Definitely. Okay. So for my next magic trick. Okay, let me go for this one. And where am I? Gosh, I don't know. I'm like kind of lost in space here. Here we go. This one is called In the Rain by Poetic Creations. A Reckless in the Rain by Poetic Creations. Sorry. Reckless in the Rain by Poetic Creations. The Higgly Piggly little wiggle worm was wiggling where others wiggled. Wagging his tail, he too was wagging. He waggled and waddled and wobbled, barefoot in the mud. It rained and everything is muddy. Mud is everywhere. So the drunk worm worms his way onto the highway, where he dies right away. Another little worm flew a kite. He was flying it way up high in the clouds. I think he thought he'd be able to reach all the way out to discover deep space. But then he went flying. Flying through the air, flying a kite, he went piloting. He piloted a kite where no worm has gone before the impact will fall. One worm wanted to go fast. I want to go fast, he said. I want to go real fast. So he put his foot on the gas, and he went so far, so fast. He went very fast. But there was a wall. His car hit a wall in the wreck. Then there was wreckage. There was wreckage everywhere, and bits and pieces of him everywhere. End poem.
Great read. Ooh, I like that. It's another little kind of rolling back off of Versus. This works in that little sort of fun wordplay while shoehorning us in as those who don't think clearly when it comes to certain things. I like the Higgly Piggly little wiggle worm was wiggling where others wiggled. Great alliteration all the way through this. So the drunk worm worms where he dies right away. That sort of you want to be stupid on the highway, you end up dead on the highway. And then again, the thought with the flight towards the sun, so to speak. And what happens? You come falling back to earth hard and fast. And then that and again, right back to the highway thought where you want to go back. Despite the thought of us being those little wiggle worms doing stupid things in our lives that put us in peril.
Right, absolutely. Okay.
What about you? You got to read it.
Yeah, you know, I got a little nervous when I started to read it. I said, oh gosh, I figured I was going to trip and fall and everything else all the way through, but it went pretty well, which I was surprised. I thought there was a lot of really great alliteration in here. It was a comical piece, and I enjoyed it very much. I have to say that it's tragic because every stanza ended up in some kind of tragedy. You know, the worm fell down on the road and died, and you know, the next one flew the kite, and the kite took off with him, but then he fell, and he died, pretty sure. And then the last piece is, the wreckage and bits of the worm everywhere, so... You know, I mean, it was fun because of the way he wrote it, but, tragic in the way that he ended each verse. Great job, PC, and thanks for sharing with us tonight. Absolutely. Okay. Hey, we have company. Let me see. Hello, 703. Is that you, Thomas?
That's me. Yeah, I got back from my poetry reading. I thought I'd stop by and say hi.
Well, it's good to have you back. Always nice to hear from you. Always, always, always.
I enjoyed that piece.
Okay.
So I can't think about if you get too caught caught up in doing what you're doing without paying attention to where you are.
Absolutely.
Keep breaking up, hon. I think we lost a chunk of that comp. I'm sorry.
Let me call out and dial out and I'll call back in.
Okay.
It's just strange when it does that. Because it sounds fine for a sentence or two, and then all of a sudden it fades me out. I did one of those comments. Here he is. Well, welcome back, Thomas.
Really? Am I breaking?
You sound pretty good now.
Well, it's been a bad connection. That goes on. We had a lot of storms. Things fell down. I swear.
So you were saying about PC's poem?
I just liked it. I thought it was cute, but it also made me think about the fact that the more you get caught up in doing what you're doing without paying attention to where you are doing it, there's really the chance of
passing. Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, it's like the rain. They none of them were really paying attention. They were so caught up in what they were doing that they forgot that it, you know, what was going on around them.
Very true. Very true. And then you have a tragic ending on top of that. Yes. Sad. I understand that. Nice comment. But I have one for you right now, Thomas. I see you have great time. So this piece I have up for you to read, Thomas, is by Daniel Duchino, called Progressive Rust.
Okay, I love Daniel. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Progressive Rust by Daniel Duchino. Rust. And the communal rebirth, regrowth, time, season, at the forgotten road, from forgotten, all things. Bridges built by our fathers and mothers, graffitied and ignored by our sisters and brothers. Human pathway, such a birth and load of all those mothers and brothers and myriad others. Bridges connect, cross and recross. As money is tossed, as spirits the cost, and the next with load, the old road. All bridges eventually lost.
Nice read, Thomas.
Great read, Thomas. Thank you very much. I like this. There's that ever-biting sort of in this of isn't so much as the bridges you cross and burn on the way out. It's the fact that all bridges of old eventually lost. There's that idea of if you don't remember the past, you're forbidden. You're always forbidden to repeat yourself come future when it comes to that which rolls around once more. And even though we are burning those bridges, the trust and friendship is at tether ends to each other these days, and everybody's at each other's throats for one reason or another, and we're repeating that which is already crossed over us from past 3, 4, 5,000 years. Things will fall if things aren't mended. Gene, what about you? What did you think?
You know, I think Dan did a great job with the prompt. It was written towards for a contest on abandoned bridges. And I think it really suited that prompt. You know, bridges built by our fathers and mothers, graffitied and ignored by our sisters and brothers. Human pathways, trudge, a burdensome load. you know, of others, of those mothers and brothers, and a myriad of others. You know, there's so many bridges that, you know, we cross over in our lives or we burn behind us, you know, as we go along. And I think that he really, he addressed that nicely throughout. And, yes, I like Dan's work, too. I have to say, Thomas, he always has some kind of, you know, great meaning in his work. So awesome job, Dan, and thanks for sharing with us tonight.
All right. Thank you, Gene. And Thomas, mm-hmm. You got to read it. How about you?
Well, I just really enjoyed the way he takes us into the idea of looking at bridges. And instead of stressing so much of how to connect one side to the other, which is the way most people tend to use the bridges, he looked at them in terms of how much we use them to forget why we're using them, and that oftentimes in forgetting why we use them, we forget to use them, in a sense. I mean, I like the, you know, trust, friendship, and the communal plate, rebirth and regrowth. It's time to hate at the bridge on a forgotten road will come will forgotten, all things fate. Reflects really nicely against those. And the next will explode, the old will explode, all bridges of old eventually lost. And I had it really when I was in high school, of all things, when I sort of first got what he's kind of talking about here in my mind, which was I was listening to people talk about what giving was about. And there was a lot of discussion about food and some discussion about pilgrims and Indians and isn't it wonderful that happened in our past. But the idea of actually what thankfulness meant and the spirit behind this idea of sharing from our habit to help someone else in their time of need was not even expressed in the entire thing. And the poet who had started this, just sort of, you know, to be amusing, was like really shocked that nobody got that. And I've had it sort of in my ear and listen for how much to really people understand the spiritual or the real meaning behind why they're doing holidays or celebrating things. And just this last Juneteenth, I listened to somebody talking about how much they didn't want to have the meaning of the holiday lost by celebrating. And I really relate to everything they were saying. And it fits so well with what he's saying in here. I really like the way Daniel does it without coming at you directly and saying, this is what I mean, you better listen. But instead sort of laying it out there and going, what can you see? What can you get from what I'm offering? I just really thought this is very delightful.
Great comment, Tom. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
All right, Jane. What about this to you?
Okie dokie. Well, let me see. Jeremy, you can call in anytime if you're the old turkey.
That's when he wants gravy first, though.
Yeah, I know. I don't qualify as gravy, but, you know, I mean, maybe he's talking about poetry. I don't know. I'm sure it's all metaphoric if you think about it right.
Just tell him, make sure he's wearing his feathers.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well, we never know. We just never know. Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up is by S. Sharp. And this is called Concrete Memory. And we have a sound card for this. Yeah, I just have to find it. There we go.
Concrete Memory. The days pass as my memories fade of your Memphis black hair swing dancing in the spring winds that, like you, have left for higher aspirations. I try to recall the feeling of your hand in mine and think sometimes I can smell your perfume when I stand by the ocean where we stood together. But instead of memories, only waves crash in. Yet when I stroll to the mailbox out front every day, I can still hear your giggling embarrassment and see your green eyes shade from when you accidentally walked in the concrete and the old guy said, "That's all right, I'm going to leave it that way."
Great read, Scott. Thank you very much for the sound card. It is very much appreciated. And Thomas, why don't we start with you? What'd you think?
Well, I really like the way this is a lot of great, tight, little short phrases. But not only does he have a nice rhythm that sort of rolls you through them, but he picks up quick details. So the person he's speaking of rose before you, and then once he has it in his hand, and you're following along, he takes you into that moment, steps into wet concrete, and it's human, and yet it immediately flashed back to the title and how something just lasts forever. I love that line.
Excellent. Thank you, Thomas. And Gene, how about you?
Well, you know, when I started reading this, right, I'm going, okay, and it's concrete memories. I'm thinking, oh, he's just, there's solid memories is where I was going right now. I'm reading it. I'm going, okay. You know, like the end of the great, I like the first stanza. The days pass as my memories faded, your Memphis black hair. You know, I thought that was a wonderful intro to this piece. And then when we get down to, I try to recall that feeling of your hand in mine. That was wonderful. And I could smell your perfume when I stand it by the ocean. Beautiful. But then when you get to the end, you find out it truly is a concrete memory. And I thought it was clever, and I thought it was well put together. I love that. I can still hear your giggling embarrassment and see your green eyes shade from when you accidentally walked in the concrete. And the old guy said, "That's all right. I'm going to leave it that way." I just thought that it was cute, and it was a neat way to bring it around and end it up. And I thought it was nicely done. So thank you, Scott, for sharing with us, as always.
Oh, absolutely, Gene. Thank you. I do like the figurative and the literal approach he took to this. I saw it in that first stanza. My memory stayed of your Memphis black hair. Offers up that sort of a touch of sadness. And then again, he starts off the second one with, "I try to recall the feeling of your hand in mine." Again, another note to sandwich. But he hits on that note right in the middle of it. "I can smell your perfume when I stand by the ocean where we stood together. But instead of memories, only waves crash in." Again, a little touch to Sanders. Yes. You finish out with the last few lines where she accidentally walks through the concrete, which hasn't quite set yet. And the old man says, "That's all right. I'm going to leave it that way." There is a touch of happiness in that moment, that remembrance, that foundation of solidity. Even though some things kind of fade with the memory, those concrete moments of literality do not fade yet. It still walks within the mind itself. So, wonderful thought there, Scott. Thank you very much. All right, Jane.
I did want to say that I looked down at the AN when you were commenting, right? And it was inspired by a photo prompt called Forgotten Journey. And it was a set of footprints in the concrete on the sidewalk. So in that relation, you know, I think you did a great job meeting the prompt. Just, you know, sounds like a great job done. So thank you there, Mr. Scott. Yeah, I got to find, there I am. I don't know what I just did, but here we go. Okay, here we go. This one is I'm going to put up, I have a SoundCloud for this one as well. It's called Foxglove by E.J. Cool. And let me hit the button. There we go.
Foxglove Fields by E.J. Cool. Fields of foxglove flowers flourish. Bell fairy jellyfish dress frills swish. Milk and cream dapple wind-brushed lay. Digger bees slow dance in lazy sway. Shaded paths part dense forest that. Red-winged blackbirds ruffled trills dispatch. Rose gold drips through weft canopy. Petrified serpentine filigree. Shadow-laced walkway glow grows dimmer. Hair-cut peridot cabochons shimmer. Runnels trundle waterfall pursues. Cottontails wop under sapsucker hues. Blue morpho powder puffs pink dusk dust. Luscious honeysuckle sings notes robust. Sphagnum moss topped rocks make pillows plush. Chime Carolina wren and brown wood thrush. Grain softened earth fills summer's pot. Fungal forms feast on fallen tree rot. Crickets whir and katydids chirr. Fireflies strobe in neon Lyman blur. Dew buds taste twilight, cool and sweet. Saffron sunsets breath sweep night-trailed feet. Diaphanous tapestry swims. Heavenly pastel paradise brims.
Great read, EJ. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Jean, why don't we start with you?
You know, this is a great piece. There's, you know, so much wonderful, not alliteration, my gosh, imagery throughout. Beautiful descriptions. You almost kind of can place yourself there. A great use of color throughout. You know, it just made things pop. It was clever. And I like the way she worded some things. Blue morpho powder puffs pink, dusk and dust. You know, it's a little bit of a tongue twister there in that line. But that's okay, because it kind of keeps the reader like on their toes with what's being said. And I thought it was just a great piece. So thank you, EJ. That was a great contribution for tonight. And thank you.
Thank you, Jean. And Thomas, how about you?
I had never really heard her before until last three or four contests, and all of a sudden I've become very aware of her, and she's very, very good. She she's skillful in a multitude of different styles. I really like this one in the way that she gracefully uses assonance and consonance, all the tools of alliteration, while never letting them overwhelm the imagery she's creating. The poem, as she just takes us through this wonderful description of the field and forest and nature that surrounds us. I find this one of those ones where I could probably read it six times and keep getting something out of it without even feeling like I had begun to just sink into it completely. Very, very well done.
Excellent, Thomas. Thank you very much. And you're absolutely right. The description of this is wonderful. And she got the picture up front so you can actually watch the unfolding thought within her voice itself. Like a lot of the words that she dropped in here, a west canopy nicely touched upon, haircut peridot cabochon shimmer, runnels trundle. Nice little play off sounds, too, that walk within this. As well as sphagnum moss top rocks make pillars plush, chime Carolina wren and brown wood thrush. There is nice notes to everything, not just the field itself, the woods in the background, the sky as the motif, but also the animals, the notes to the bees as well as the birds. So this was a wonderful full in-depth piece as to what she walked through in that in those foxglove fields. Thank you very much, EJ. All right, Jane. We're back on.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out if I want to do another audio or two. I have a few more all in a row in my chopping board. Maybe I'll skip for a few. Let's see what I have. Okay, Rex, I'm going to look at the next one up for you. This is called Scion. That's going to be the work by Jed. So, let me find the room. Yes. And whenever you're ready.
All right. Scion by Jeg 325. Scion falls from black shadows, speaking on her Ouija phone line, saying she wanted another night, cold chills up and down my spine. Wearing dark as a ballroom dress, her frame standing 5'4", that beautiful face stopped traffic. Fierce seduction stalking my door. Trapped in cold arms of a shadow, she, this girl, stole my last breath. The gatherer of shattered dreams, her sight means romance's death. Floorboards squeak down the hall. Lady Apocalypse is coming for me. Corruption inside and ebony desire, another notch etched in her hotel. Key. And poem. Thomas, why don't we start with you, please?
This moves quickly, but it's got really nice images. Speaking on the phone line, he wanted another night, you know, and then the cold chills. It moves quickly. It kind of haunts, teases you. It's descriptions, you know, beautiful. Stop traffic, fierce seduction stalking my door. I found myself really enjoying that last line, corruption inside an ebony desire, another notch etched on the hotel. Well done. It's one of those ones. Regardless of the fact that it's terribly deep, it's just delightful and fun to have had the opportunity to read it and hear it.
Thank you, Thomas. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I said this is a nicely penned piece. You know, it's very, I was going to say well described, but I guess, you know, imagery would be a much better way to put it. But, you know, Scion called from Black Shadow, speaking on her Ouija phone line, saying she wanted another night, cold chills up and down my spine. That was another great lead-in, you know, stanza. You know, I kind of always tend to like when the first stanzas really want to draw you in. You know, attracting cold arms to the shadow, teeter's girl stole my last breath. The gatherer of shattered dreams, her sight means romance is death. I like the imagery in it. I like the rhyme in it. I think that the story that he wanted to tell was well done. I think that it was just a good piece. You know, I mean, it wasn't about the girl next door, but it, you know, I mean, they have to have a little darkness somewhere. So I think that it was a great job. So thank you so much, that you do.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Jane. There is a touch of darkness to this, but it walks a different flavor because it hits on the thought of a temptation and the downfall of many a married man. Because the last thing is another notch etched in her hotel key, the obvious thought being, especially with the angle of the cold chills up and down my spine, fierce seduction stalking my door. Her sight means romance is death. So there's a definite intonation of knowing what is going on. Her being the downfall of married men, so to speak, but also the fact that he's falling into this arena as well in that moment because she's 5'4", beautiful face, stopped traffic. A cheetah's girl stole my last breath. The gatherer of shattered dreams. Well, she might enjoy the moment. You do too in that moment, but it's the back end which you're fearing in the moment. And I love that second line, speaking on her Ouija phone line, There's a nice intonation right there with that one line of something evil on the prowl.
Right.
Back to you.
Back to me.
Yes.
Okay. Wow. Always back to me. Let me see now. That will bring me to, I guess, me. So, let's see if I can read this one all right. Sorry. Over here, back over there. I am actually where I need to be. Kind of. Yes. Hi, Thomas. Okay, let's see now. I have this one here by Rhonda, not Rhonda, Yoshri. It's called Halcyon Harmony.
Okay.
Yeah. The graceful knight spreading his wings on earth, dispersing over the horizon freely with cakes opening in various directions to welcome the stars of the victorious army. The shimmering skies face glowing bright, embracing the lustrous crescent plates, bathing the air's body with ascetic gold rays as vigorous fireflies strolling leafily. Summer's oven heat is tempered by the perpetual prairie's breeze, the grasses donning stylish gleaming raiments and undulating as they're skating in a dance ball. The lush jacarandas standing picturesquely and keeping well together as enamored lovers seeking the precious delights of solitude and home.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. Thomas, how about you? What do you think of this?
I found myself the musical program for Jewish meditation, progressive muscle relaxation, guided imagery, brain gym, brain repatterning, breathing techniques. It reminds me of like when I was a little kid and I went down a dark road that had trees overhanging it, and both bright and comfortable and delighted, you know, that great mix of just enough fear to raise a couple of goosebumps, but not enough to keep you from, you know, continuing on your journey. And I like to, you know, describe some of these things, like in the opening, gates opening in various directions to welcome the stars as victorious army. I can just see trees are moving around, dancing along the clouds. And it keeps building on. There's a really nice use of hidden rhymes and phrases, you know, setting up phrases that build on each other, donning stylish, gleaming raiment, and undulating as a daisy in a dance ball. You just the sway of the graceful, just very dynamic and very sharp way it creates the mood and the vision. I was quite impressed.
Nice. I like that, Thomas. Thank you. I love that picture. It's gorgeous. It offers up that sepia tone of old, and it also offers that that distant look down the road, because you get the a view going through the trees, and it's almost never ending, so to speak. And she fixes on the picture itself, but doesn't give us the sepia thought within it. It gives us something a little bit more beautiful. The shimmering sky space glowing bright, embracing the lustrous crescent tight, bathing the air's body with ascetic golden rays as vigorous fireflies strolling gleefully. That's a wonderful touch of thought right there, as well as what you offered up with the welcome the stars as a victorious army. That is a nice note to the fact that it isn't really dark yet, but it offers up that sort of being in the middle of a place where there's no interference from a false light, so to speak, of what we create, but there's an open expanse of sky to actually look up to and be adorned with that victorious army of stars coming out. And I, too, was struck with that stanza, summer's of an heat is tempered by the perpetual prairie breeze. There is a nice note of not just the warmth, but a kind of sensuality in that that touch of dating in a dance hall. And the jacaranda standing picturesquely, a great note to the thought of the trees rolling aside of each of the road itself. And they do look like lovers seeking precious delights of solitude. So well written there, Randa. Thank you very much. Beautiful scenery. All right, Jean, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, I have to say, I love the image as well, Russ. I thought that was such a great image. And I think that this poem spoke well for it. And after you, I think this is the stanza you quoted. The shimmering skies, face glowing bright, embracing the lustrous crescent tight, bathing the air's body instead of golden rays, and vigorous butterflies strolling gleefully. I like something in every one of these stanzas, I have to say. But I like her reference to the crescent moon because I felt that it really pulled the picture into it a bit. But I thought it was very well done. So thank you, Randa, for sharing with us. Great job. Absolutely. Let's see. Oh, we have a phone call. Woo-hoo. Okay. Hello, Pam.
Hi, Dean. Hi, Rex. Hi, Thomas.
Hey,
Pam.
Good to be here.
A party.
Okay. Did you hear Pam that piece by Randa?
I did not get to hear it. Sorry.
That's all right. I get to twice on the next one.
Yeah. Does it bring it back to me, Rex?
Absolutely.
See, I knew it.
Rockpile on the rabbit.
Okay. Thomas, the next one I have, I'm going to give to you. And let's see if I can stop hitting the wrong buttons. Okay, here we go. And this one is called A Dog's Pavane by Jack Blue. There we go. And whenever you're ready.
I've got to get this thing to reload again. Just a second. And there we go. I got it. Okay. A Dog's Pavane, number three by Jack Blue. The dean in love to be Olympic, tail the inner animal sack, the noble knight, where he marked at the sky, shining royal blue. So through the clouds, beyond the mortal wings, he tried to feel the miracle of the earthly. The lunar violet sweetly waved around. He sailed the channel back to the cosmic ferry where his sullen queen found him hovering. With fantastic memories, he dreamed in royal blue.
Great read, Thomas. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Pam, why don't we kick it off with you?
Yeah, I really love this. I love the mythological feel to it. I like how he opens us up with the name Selene for the moon. And I like that Selene's unicorn in love with the Olympian Earth sailed the lunar channel fast. Oh, a wonderful tale about, you know, that love between the earth and the moon and the way they move each other. I also really like how this has just a very dreamlike quality. And another favorite line of mine is, soon the lunar violet sweetly waved around. He sailed the channel back to the cosmic fairyland. I like how it gives that kind of that feel of as if it's a reflection on love itself, but it's also a reflection about how everything, you know, sky, earth, and water has this sense of connection. So beautifully written and very well done.
Oh, thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I just said, you know, I thought this was a well-penned piece. I like the imagery throughout, but I always like Jack's use of color within his writing. And, you know, I'm not sure what it is about it, but he pulls it in and he pulls it in nicely. And, you know, I think a lot of times I find it soothing because of his choice of colors, the blues and the violets. And you know, it gives that a more ethereal feel, I think, the way he uses them. And I have to agree with Pam. I thought this was a tale very well told. It was a clever take on the whole, you know, concept of the story. You know, Selene's unicorn in love with the Olympian Earth. You know, sailed the lunar channel fast to the noble mountaintop, where he marveled at the sky shining royal blue. It has a wonderful feel about it, and it takes on a life of its own as it goes along. You know, and I think it was really well done. So thank you, Jack, for sharing with us.
Thank you, Jean. It might be that your thought with the colors is the blue offers that touch of cool, while the violet stuff offers that touch of warmth. So you get a nice little contrast between the two. And
yeah.
Thomas, how about you?
I kept looking at the title. It's A Dog's Tobane, meaning to me. Dog's Tonal Dance. Very stately dance. Again, look at this and trying to find the opening starts with me, which is the moon, and how the moon hovers with the earth, and that it's still just sailing the course of the moon, sails the lunar channel fast. But where he, at the mountaintop, I think it's right, the dog, I'm thinking, marveled at the sky shining royal blue, as if all of a sudden I'm now caught in a dog's dance and a dog's dream. Soaring through the clouds beyond the mortal wings, he tried to feel the miracle of the earthly tentacle. Now, I read, and the pentacle is an important part of the tarot, and I found myself looking at that and thinking, okay, we're talking about those things that the material world definitely fits for a dog. And the color and the feeling like I'm dreaming so I can fly, which even a dog would do, I'd imagine. But he sailed the channel back. Now following the moon to the cosmic fairyland, where the moon begins in a fairy world. And the dog is suddenly realizing that his dream his own polite ability to run in his sleep, his fantastic memory dreamed in royal blue. Perhaps not. Perhaps the dog is really getting off on a wondrous vision that is occurring to him. You never know. There's that sensitiveness of the mystery, a little bit of madness tossed in that I find kind of dull.
Nice, Thomas. I like where you took that, the dog angle and the dreaming. You hit on that note, the first stanza kind of does offer up that sort of dream. And Jack brings it back to the thought with at the end of the third one, with fantastic memories he dreamed in royal blue. So there is a connection and a circulation back towards itself. So the thought with Selene and the coolness in royal blue might be that ease of night walking down where the dog itself is bathed in that coolness and still offered up that touch of warmth in the lunar violet sweetly waved around him, where the dreams took hold fast and gave him something to enjoy in the moment. And the carpet fairyland, the sullen queen found him hovering to her. It's a touch of hitting on that note of finding that one female dog that is truly his, so to speak. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, they don't dream that way, but you know, it might be nice to think they would here and there. Either that or, hey, all men are dogs, and this is strictly for us.
That's true, too.
Nicely done, Jack. Thank you very much. All right, Jean.
Thank you, Doc. Well, next one I'm going to put up for Kim to read. And this is a piece called Morning by Mamia.
Morning by Mamia. The sky fell down the day you died. The city was flooded with black tears from sunken eyes that secretly wept. The city lights were dim and the sounds were muted. Souls with bent backs shuffled on silent feet, murmuring loud whispers of guttural prayers. You lay down in your silk-lined coffin, gilded for all to see. I stand mourning beneath the gallows tree where you hung alone. Do you remember when I took your broken body down from the tree's withered branches? You looked so peaceful, another soul freed from strife. They came then to your funeral, weeping and howling, counterfeit sorrows, drenching the grave you're in with crocodile tears, while their eyes remain dry like their desiccated hearts. Where are you now, my erstwhile love? Are you waiting for me to follow suit? Will you wait for me on the other plane? I am traversing life and death between sleep and waking. I see your face everywhere. I hear your voice in every breath. Your old cologne fills the air as twilight embraces the sky. Again, I lay down and hear the rain pounding on the windows. It is drum that first night. You took me in your arms, but you are not here. Only your ghost lingers. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. All right, Jean. You know this one had come up for you.
You know, I had a feeling you were going to do that. I think that this was a really interesting piece by Mamia. You know, at first, you know, you're going through and then you get down a little further and it kind of throws you. The skies fell down the day you died. The city was flooded with black tears from sunken eyes that secretly wept. That was interesting to me because, you know, the secretly wept. Why would you be secretive, you know? And then you go down a little further, you know, and you find the... here, you lay down in your silk-lined coffin, gilded for all to see. I stand mourning beneath the gallows tree where you hung alone. Wow, you know, it's a pretty intricate piece, like story-wise. And I think it was well done, and it comes off with a darker edge to me, you know. Because, you know, the gallows tree and you're hanging alone and, you know, the mystery of this, you know, secret pew. But, you know, it's a pretty intricate piece, I really think. They came then to your funeral weeping and howling counterfeit sorrows, drenching the grave you're in with crocodile tears while their eyes remain dry like their desiccated hearts. I mean, she's really giving them all a scolding, you know, without going direct. I think it was just an awesome job here. Very well put together piece, Christine. And thanks for sharing with us tonight. I really enjoyed it. Well done.
Nice, Jean. Thank you. And Thomas, how about you?
Well, beyond the topic. Morning. The opening two lines sort of thing for me with the sky fell down the day you died, and the city was flooded with black tears from sunken eyes that secretly. secretly wept. And I found myself wondering why everyone didn't have to do this secret. Where we fight. And as you find this person being hung, is it someone who was hung or lynched? Wasn't really good. His lover, the person who knew how innocent he or she was, could be a she. You were going to put your both body down from the tree's withered branch. You looked so peaceful. Another soul's freed strife. And that soul freed back, freed from strife, makes me feel even more that this is a sense of, you know, what everybody may have said they wanted, but it really wasn't, because it was the person who was actually criminal. And so everything becomes pretense. And, and even the, where are you now, my first girl, are you waiting for me to follow suit? You know, perhaps agreeing to accept being the guilty one, protecting the other one, are they covering up? I mean, it's all tied together in a way, and yet it leaves you with all these sort of interesting questions about guilt, purpose, you know, find what's good in death, or are we just lying to ourselves when we die for any other reason than life has finally run out? Because I tend to, I have conversations that I love and care to be passed on, and will tell you that I wander around with a great ghost, you know. I'm still talking to him. He's still here in my life. Very nicely done.
Great comment, Will Thomas. Thank you. And Pam, you got to read it. How about you?
Yes. I really liked this. It was a wonderful, emotive, beautifully written, dark narrative. What I liked about it is it was layered. On one hand, you have what is obviously the relationship between two people, an extremely close relationship. And on the other hand, you have the commentary about what was happening socially, because this is obviously a very well-known person who is known throughout the city. And there are those who truly wept for this person, you know, the secret weepers, the grievers, and this woman that loves him. And there was the those who obviously were opposed. Like, it feels almost like there's this underlying of like a political agenda, and like he didn't fit into their game. And so then you got the posers who are you know, pretend to be grieving, but they're truly not. They're, you know. And it's really well written all the way through, but I especially am drawn to the questions like, do you remember when I took your broken body down from the tree's withered branches? You look so peaceful, another soul freed from strife. And another soul freed from strife really shows you a lot of what's going on within that city, within that society. And also the fact that his body was left hanging there by everyone except her shows a kind of a certain respect for the dead. Beautifully written and very well done.
Great comments, you guys. There is a note to this, even though it might hit on that sort of a singular, it walks deeper than that. It's kind of, I see a bit of spirituality in this. You look down to all those who've been set as heroes for the people and who've fallen one way or another. This hits on all those notes, the sort of the silk-lined coffin, the gallows tree, the broke of the tree's withered branches, the looking peaceful, the crocodile tears, like their desiccated hearts. It all hits on the falseness, the falseness of promise, the falseness of that which comes after, the falseness in those who supposedly weep in remembrance of this fallen hero, but yet it all walks on the note that this, you can walk this down from Christ hanging on the cross. There's a touch of that myth too, as well as walking along the last 2,000 years in history to all those who stood up for something and those who heralded and those who hated. So there's that kind of fence line that walks in this, offering up both points of view, and that sort of where are you now, my erstwhile love? Are you waiting for me to follow suit? Will you wait for me on the other plane? There is a touch of spirituality in that. And then the thought with that the last two stanzas, I'm traversing life and death between sleep and waking. I see your face everywhere. I hear your voice in every breath. Your old cologne fills the air as twilight embraces the sky. The old cologne hits on a notion of not just intimacy, but knowing the person. And I lay down and hear the rain pounding on the tin roof as it drummed that first night you took me in your arms. Again, an offered note of sensuality, but also an offered note of spirituality. But you are not here. Only your ghost lingers. That note is something that has already been done, seen, passed on. Yet, it still hangs within the air, but it isn't strong enough for all to embrace. Nicely done, Manuel. Thank you. All right, Jean. Back to see you.
Okay. Okay. Here we go. The next one I want to put up is by Arcana Amore. And this one has a sound card as well. So let me hit the button. Here we go.
Angels pierce shadows in awakened minds, dancing their flocks of soaring serenity upon a breezeless void of celestial mists, where cloudless heavens drift violet hues. Alternate universes swim seas of space, weaving their webs of tantric tapestries, colliding in collapsing corridors of consciousness, amid shimmering waves that ripple beyond, where abstract beauty bathes seductive shores in a meditative kaleidoscope of crystal chasms, echoing with chants that melt into silence. In scenes unseen that swim in dreams, rainbows ripple through lakes of stillness that softly ebb shores with sapphire tides, where voices on whispering winds float by, stirring ethereal melodies of psychedelic silence. As time flows past in dwindling reflections that mirror the perfect prisms of truth, pulsing to the rhythm of harmonious hearts who cherish these realms of esoteric skies.
Wonderful read, Arcana. Thank you very much to SoundCloud. It is much appreciated. All right, Pam, why don't we start with you? Dan, are you mutating?
I was mutating because I tend to do that with longer pieces. Well, my first comment was that whatever Arcana was smoking when he wrote this, I want some of it because I think it was pretty good stuff. But no, you know, I love this all the way through. It's always great to hear him read his work. As always, the alliteration, the flow, you know, he's one of those that there's such a metered flow to his poetry. Even when it doesn't rhyme, that it has the feel of a rhyming poem. The general idea that I got from this, which I really liked, was how it's about how there are those spiritual realms that are available to those who are willing to open their mind. And I like the meditative feel of this. I like particularly my favorite lines were weaving their web of tantric tapestries, colliding and collapsing corridors of consciousness amid shimmering waves that ripple beyond. And then rainbows ripple through lakes of stillness that softly ebb shores of sapphire tides, stirring ethereal melodies of psychedelic silence. There's this real feeling to me of how music can play with the mind, and silence in itself can become a form of music. I really thought this was just a wonderful write. It's so captivating and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Thomas, how about you?
Well, tonight I seem to be starting with the titles and just the whole idea of esoteric, it's only a small number of people. So that it's knowledge that's only available. And the idea of the sky being heavens, which fits with the angels, shadows, and awakened mind, dancing their flocks, pouring serenity upon the breathing void of celestial mist. But the whole idea that there's this place where you become part of a great adventure, an alternate universe swims seas of space, feeding the webs of tantric tapestry. And, you know, this is higher plane. Going to take you into a place where you're meditating, you're serene, you're more than perfect. You see the scene that swim and dream. All this one evidence is soft. The echoes with sapphire tides. Her voices are whispering winds flow by. And if I'm sounding slightly cynical, I apologize. I am. I can't help myself. And that, you know, because the last line captures the whole thing. Those who cherish these realms of esoteric skies. And that probably sums up my exactly.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Thomas. Gene, how about you?
Well, you know, I was kind of drifting along with this piece as he was reading. I thought there was great abstract imagery. It's not an abstract poem, but abstract imagery. Because, you know, you couldn't really, a lot of it I couldn't quite put my finger on, but I could sense it. And I thought that was really cool. I think he definitely created an intriguing place to just drift along with the words. I thought the audio was great. And really... went well with that last thing I said, drift along with the words. You kind of just, you know, go with the flow of it. But there were so many great stanzas to choose from, but I grabbed this one. Where abstract beauty bathes seductive shores in a meditative kaleidoscope of crystal chasms, echoing with chants that melt into silence in scenes unseen that swim in dreams. I thought it was just a great piece. It was great to listen to. Absolutely. Thank you, Arcana.
Oh, great.
great comments, everyone. The music I thought was wonderful. It offers up something just like the deep sleep music or the meditative music one puts on for a couple of hours, and you just sit back, relax, and the mind opens up a touch. That's what he's hitting on, that first stanza, awakened mind. And then again, the thought with the psychedelic silence was in that notion of third eye view, digging deep into the pineal imagination that seems to be so hardened in most, yet can be opened by some to the point where they can drift, as Thomas said, between universes, between waking and dreaming states into other realms of thought and see what is there with a mind that is open to that which it can be received from those realms itself. And I thought that was a great thought, an idea placed along with the music as well as the words in this itself. It offered that dreamy aspect, yes, solidified the notion of actually digging into one's own inner third eye and finding that realm to habituate in the moment. Nicely done, Jana. Thank you. All right, Jean.
Awesome sauce. I have another audio to put up for Jessica D. Now, Thomas, before I do that, did you bring a piece for tonight? Because I don't see one on the board.
I could get one.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to ask because I didn't want to skip over you, you know, and not ask you. Okay, let me put this one up for Jessica D. And here we go.
Drip by Drip by Jessica D. The stoic matron with her robotic smile fills my veins with poison for a little while. To kill the demon inside, drip by fucking drip, no more can it hide, a lethal courtship.
Wonderful read there, Jessica. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Pam, why don't we kick it with you first, please? Ouch. Pop.
Absolutely. This is just a raw, emotive, powerful brevity with its combination of metaphors and yet straightforward. Drip by drip speaks volumes. I have to say, you know, I've known Jessica for years, and I honestly, this was the first time listening to this, not this right now, but I had listened to it, I think it was like either yesterday or today, the SoundCloud, and it was the first time in all these years I've heard her voice, and it was really nice to be able to hear her voice. You know, I really felt like, you know, how she brings in, you know, the chemotherapy and how it kills the demon inside, and, you know, it just packs a punch all the way through. But the ending where it says, no more can it hide, a lethal courtship. And, you know, the fact that oftentimes we have to fight fire with fire and death with death and poison with poison, and you realize that there's no easy way about it. So just, I'm really glad she shared this with us and that she made that recording.
Thanks, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, Pam, you know, I was on that line the same as you stated about the chemo and what have you, but I wasn't sure. Maybe I was wrong, but I do think that this was just a really well-penned piece, and I think it really, it does hit the nail on the head, you know. You do have to fight fire with fire, and sometimes the cure is almost as bad as the illness in some cases, you know. But that leap of courtship, you know, only one's going to win, and, you know, I'm rooting for Jeff, you know. It's a wonderful, it's just wonderfully put together and stated, and I think that she did an excellent job expressing it. So on that note, great job, Jess, and thanks for sharing with us all.
Nice, Jean. Thank you. Thomas, how about you?
The first line, the stoic matron. That really struck me, especially after I heard the whole piece and the strength of her words, the way she spoke them when she hit the last three. Because people who serve those of fighting to death. I want to put it that way, but dead. Or the death is what's next. There's still oftentimes, of cancer, said they always felt like they had some secret, that they knew what was coming more than he knew what was coming, and were trying to protect his son by being very stiff, he said in some ways it was easier to deal with them than it was to deal with the ones who smiled and tried to be loving. This really struck me because it catches both sides. Those who work with you and who help deliver the drug, and your own personal relationship with what's happening to you. The anger feeling here towards having to go through this to kill the demon inside. It's just I feel it. Really impressed that she's packed so much into a quick little less than 10-line poem. It's a very, very, very well done.
Great comments, everybody. And since you clarified as to what this really is about, I guess I'm going to go back to my original thought as to how it struck me. It can walk another line. It hit me with the stoic matron with a robotic smile, fills my veins with poison. And it hit me up with that sort of very own nurse mate, a nurse Ratchet in the moment from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. The idea of that toxic relationship inside a facility where you are bound and gagged, so to speak. And this is how it plays out. You thinking one way, the nurse doing the job on the other hand, dropping this and that in because that's what she's told to do, and how that dance works itself. So thank you, Pam and Jean, for the clarification on what it's really about. But that was where I went initially. All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Okay, Rex, I'm coming to you to read the next one for us. This is called Pararexia Pamnesia by Luke J.R.
Okay.
I don't know.
Pararexia Pamnesia by Luke J.R. Among the delights of summer were picnics to the decayed woods. Through a far station of growing hunger, trees climbed over each other. Alongside a dried lake lived the forest animals in their wake. Fleshy pulsations from observation clutched in the claws of carnivores. Summer fried roots eaten by the rats with wings, withering away grass chumps by the hungriest of plant eaters. Such a delightful summer with the sun becoming a scorched lover. Of the dreary sky, clouds ready to cry, broken hearts beating with every retry. Picnics scattered around the forest, with summer taking over. Hotter than the sun, the burns of a lover. Among the delights of summer were picnics to the decayed woods, through a forest station of growing hunger, deranged hoods. Trees climbed over each other. First came the lover. Alongside dried lakes did the forest animals ready to bake. Fleshy pulsations from observation clutched in the claws of plant eaters. Some are fried roots, eaten by the bats without wings, withering away grass stumped by the saddest of creatures. Such an uninviting delight, a summer with a broken light. The fleshy lumps started move as the animals stayed still. Cute little giggles followed by the worst to mankind, a creature that greater than them all, the sun would remind. Among the delightful occasions of the summer were picnics to the trees. Through a forest station that became a rootless story, first there was a lover, next were the animals. Before they had ended the wake, they would bake. A creature greater than an only smile, the sun would cry. Tears formed on the animals as they melted away. Goodbye. End poem. And Thomas, why don't we start with you, please?
The title, the idea behind an eating disorder, of things that are not food, almost like parorexia is like the fear of eating things that might not be food. And having a good memory where remember not only the events and everything about them, like a photographic memory, but you remember everything you thought, too, at the same time. And this becomes the opening line: among the delights of summer were picnics to the decayed woods. All of a sudden, you're beginning to get this, that things are not as they're supposed to be. And as she takes you through it into the final destruction of the animals, and I'm going to hit the slide here. I could spend hours dissecting this. It's really about who's consuming who, what's consuming what, and is everything that we are taking in really serving to feed us, and yet in a way we really can't. We really have to be conscious of this. How we all feed off of each other, and feel from one another.
Tom broke up his message. Me.
I don't know. I can't hear Rex or Tom.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I hear you now. Yes.
Hmm.
All of a sudden you broke up and we're going, so.
All right, Pam, how about you?
Well, I really, first of all, Rex, I thought you did a wonderful read of that. I thought there were some words you should easily get paid $5 for. To me, the main theme of this, I thought this had strong imagery and metaphor, and the main theme is the struggles of nature and life and death, and especially during those summer months when rain is not plentiful, you know, because we think of summer as beautiful and filled with life, and there is so much about it that is beautiful, but there are areas of the world where those summer months, you know, when certain areas go without rain and animals are starving and there is sickness all around, and it, to me, it's saying, okay, yes, you know, there are these beautiful memories, but don't forget there are also these memories of death and decay and destruction. I thought this really had a kind of a sardonic bite to it. Among the delights of summer were picnics to the decayed woods, to a forest station of growing hunger, deranged hood, trees climbed over each other. First came the lover alongside a dried lake, lived the forest animals ready to bake. And it really just had a, like I said, strong imagery and metaphors, a kind of a, almost a rhythmic beat to it, you know, and such an uninviting delight, a summer with a broken light, the fleshy lumps, started moving as the animals stayed still. Just a really horrifying sense of the desperation of animals who can't find water and can't find food, and trees competing with each other in order to survive. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Well, this has some really intricate imagery throughout. Lots and lots of it. And the pictures are all well painted. I think that it was just a well-expressed piece and nicely penned tale. You know, I like the intro stanza was great, the outro stanza was great, and everything in between was really well done. So, I mean, for me to pick any one, it could be any of them. You know, the intro was good. It drew you into the poem. The ending stanza just definitely tied it all up and put it in a perspective. So I thought it was just really well done. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
I guess I'm going to fold off of what Tom said about the opening called Pararexia and Pamnesia. The idea of pararexia, the angle of eating strange things. And Pamnesia, I guess the best way I can hit that with is the persistence of memory in mentality. So the idea of things you see again and again and things you are willing to eat when nothing else is available is kind of where I'm going to go with this, because it does hit on rats with wings, and then at the bottom end hits the rats without wings. So there is a notation to change, or back without wings, so to speak. Things that change, the withered grass stopped by the saddest of creatures, even though that is a plentiful food source, if it's dry, brown, it doesn't offer up much in the way of nutrients, even though it does have a touch of moisture within it, because this speaks a whole lot on aridity, the decayed woods, the trees fighting each other. That's normal in its angle of a thought when it comes to nature itself. The strongest take the nutrients, while the smaller ones that don't fall away to the wayside as things go. But there is, as well as in this, it kind of hits on the notion of willing to eat that which is not normal to the particular creature, and doing what it can for that touch of moisture and or food. So nicely done there, Luke J.R. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jeanine.
What's the joke? Let me get back up here. Thomas, I'm going to put your piece up next. So thank you very much.
Return to war. We gave up our homes to plows and cattle, pesticides, steroids, train tracks, guns, and bullets. All to put a stop to babies' cries, brave boys die. Okay. Only death would. Disease and horrors scoured like the wind. We knew the path was given. No. Shadows passed, the wolf was dying, and buffalo gone, prairie divided, time to a farm where once forever could be harvested. With once tied to soul, now only live liquor, the dollar, food. Nowhere.
bravery, wander to bullets and cannons, death dogs those who can hold on to their nation. Oceans abide, dead seas turn. You think you know everything. You forget how much there is to be learned. Technology crumbling, old paths rising, wolf howls as full moons shift tides. Nations never die, only seek to write their own history. The dance keeps on the earth. The earth never stops listening, and new ways open to the patient walkers of prairie rest. New oceans speak the old language. Never forget, never forgotten, only wait for the spirit, the name of man, half of warrior, all become one. Fences fall, clouds fail, animals seek those that understand and love them. A new world awakens and we cease our arrogance, except we are not here to rule, only to serve.
Great read, Thomas. Thank you very much. And Gene, why don't we start with you, please?
Well, you know, Thomas, I loved this the first night we read it. It was just a wonderful piece on that prompt. I thought the thoughts were well conveyed. I did yank this part of it, but, you know, the whole thing was really well done. Rattlesnakes cast a straighter path. The death was upon us. The shadows were cast. The wolf was dying and buffalo gone, prairie divided, tied to a farm. Where once forever could be harvested, when tied to souls, now only live liquor of the dollar. With nowhere to go, bravely squandered, to bullets and cannons, death starts those who cannot hold on to their nation. I just thought it was very well written and nicely done. So thank you for sharing with us.
Nice, Dean. Dan, how about you?
Yeah, this is really a powerful and emotive write. It's a strong take on the chosen prompt, Tom. I really like how you remind us that history has been filled with moments of arrogance and greed and the destruction of not only Mother Nature, but the destruction of peace and the way of life. I really like the imagery, and this is a wonderful write all the way through, but particularly what stands out to me is the imagery in Rattlesnakes Cast a Straighter Path. The death was upon us, the shadows were cast, the wolf was dying, and buffalo gone. A real sense to the way, a way of life was just pulled away from a people. But I like how you bring us to technologies crumbling, old paths rising, wolves howl as full moon shift tides, nations never die, only cease to write their own history. The idea of that, you know, if history can be written by those who truly know it and passed along in truth, there's this idea of, you know, feeling like this sense of hope of a history, a nation's history, the nation's, the American Native's history being brought forth and to be known by everybody. I also like the philosophical element in the line, when you think you know everything, you forget how much there is to be learned. And there is so much truth spoken in those lines, in the idea that, you know, when we remain arrogant, we remain foolish. So wonderful, right, Tom? Very well done.
Nice, Sam. Tom, I like this too. It does, it walks back in history, but it still kind of hits on a note of today as well. I like that second stanza, the opening line, rattlesnakes cast a straighter path. A lot of truth in that. The wolf was dying, buffalo gone. God, the there was a time when Buffalo was the major force in this country. You had a herd that ranged from Texas clear up to Canada and sat on the sort of 30 million animals in it, in the herd itself. So when they thundered, when they ran on herd, you could hear it from coast to coast, which was something that most of us will never understand nor be able to comprehend, yet it was there. I did like this single three-line angle. Those last two lines were really, really good. When you think you know everything, you forget how much there is to be learned. Boy, that hits a notion, the idea of how people think that, yeah, I know everything, we're going to do what I want, and that's the way it is. Let's see what I forget. And nations never die, only cease to write their own history. True. When you kill off your own past, there isn't much history that you can put forth after that. And I did like, what was it? Never forgotten, only waiting for the spirit. The nature of man, the path of the warrior, all to come home. Fences fall, piles fail. Animals seek those that understand and love them. That hits me up with the idea of the spirit animal within. And a new world awakes when we cease our arrogance, except we are not here to rule, only serve. That was always the thought to the native inhabitants of any particular arena around the world. So they were attuned with nature, and that also kind of hits on what's coming to us next. The thought of CRISPR, we're getting CRISPR cows very soon. GMO modified cows will soon be shipped to our market, and we will never know how we can actually, if they're ingestible or what they might do to us in the long run. Yeah, we're getting them.
We all our system thanks to certain CBAs and other classes. We don't know how much damage that's doing to us. So, you know.
Thank you, Tony. And Gene, we're coming back to you.
Okay. Pam, I have your piece up next.
The Piranha Haven and the Looking Glass. The Looking Glass turns its pages to reflect the Piranha Haven, vessels of sand emptying caricatures into inkwells, parchment tossed into the spit of flame, curled tendrils of misguided licorice whips. High society fails peekaboo polygraph tests and the rattle of thumbed edges. The calligraphy that speaks against beatification of stale hypocrisy. Look the other way, they say, as shorn sheep lamenting. Don't see us as we are. See us as we want you to be. Don't write our sins upon rolling hills of provoked dreams. Leaders laced in spineless tundras of earthworms squirming. Still waters becoming the mud swallowed and spewed with a turn of the neck. Notes scribbled across the stargazer's brow spills defecation upon Burgoy reasoning, hemorrhoids of pasta art becoming the mirror on the wall. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you very much. And Thomas, why don't you start us off?
I listened to all this, but I'm still putting it together. Why don't you give me a chance to pick somebody else first?
All right. Gene?
Thanks, Thomas, for throwing me under the bus. I'll remember that, Thomas. Don't you worry. Pam, this was really a great write. I look at the two quotes that you had based this on, and I thought it was pretty incredible. As always, you know, your imagery is always stellar. It's there's no cookie cutters about you, girlfriend. That's what I can say. There's no cookie cutters about you. You know, it's always unique, and it's always got a lot of sharp edges. You know, your points are always driven home well. And I think it was just really wonderfully expressed.
And I think, I mean, the title blew me away. I'm like, okay, where is she going this week? You know, because one never knows. But it was clever, and it was just really well worded. You know, and I don't mean clever in a trite way. Definitely packed a punch. So great job as always.
Thank you, Jean. And you are right. I like to keep you on your toes, guessing what I'm going to come up with this week. So
I know you do.
Well, I think the title says quite a bit. The Piranha Haven and the Looking Glass. The idea, because you open up the Looking Glass, turns its pages to reflect the Piranha Haven, that which is mirrored as one looks into it. You hit on that high society fails, peekaboo polygraph test, you know, rattle of thumbed edges. There's that idea of how the larger end, the smaller end looks down on the larger end as those who are there to serve as opposed to them leading. It's never about the leading. It's always about, hey, do as I say, not as I do. But you hit on that too. Where was it? Don't write out. Oh, that wasn't it. Don't see us as we are. See us as we want you to be. That is the idea of, hey, you know what? We see you as the blues, the low end, and that is the way you want to be held in life. Those shorn sheep lamenting in the pews of your forgotten God. Lead us laced with silent thunders of earthworms squirming. Boy, that hits on the note of extreme vilification of the fornicatory attitudes of those who think they can do no wrong, yet continue to spill wrong across everything. And then you hit note scribble across the stargazer's brow, spills defecation upon bourgeois reasoning. And that's the idea of they don't want free thinkers offering up something that might actually work because it takes away from their notoriety as to how they want things to work. And hemorrhoids of pasta art becoming the mirror on the wall. Yeah, showing your ass and it's still shit.
Great observations, Rex. Thank you.
You're welcome. And Tom, back to you.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, you call it the Prada Haven and Looking Glass. You could call it fake news and a narcissist's dream. I love the opening six lines of Looking Glass. Trusted pages reflect the Piranha Haven. Vessels withstand the caricatures in themselves. It just, all the way through, I find myself laughing because it's just a nice, damning picture of people who spend all time finding ways to reframe, re-edit, take over the narrative, all those little things that say so that the truth never betrays what you want to say. You know, like the calligraphy that speaks against beatification or stale hypocrisy. You can try, but look the other way, they say, as shorn sheep lament. Yes, you know. You got to control the narrative because if you're going to sell it to somebody, they absolutely must believe that what they're getting is the truth. It's one of the first things I learned in sales. You have to don't write our sins of rolling hills to provoke dreams. You know, give them the dream. The reality makes you richer. It's a really damning piece in a whole lot of ways towards those who think that somehow it is their job to ensure that the world talks about them in the way that they think. Until you get down to the last seven lines, you know, scribbled across star gazes brow, still patient upon bourgeois reasoning.
Thank you, Tom.
Find out that what we're trying to declare is fake, isn't
hemorrhoids of plaster art becoming the mirror on the wall. Yeah, you know, when you live with your lies, you end up eating your lies, and that's all you have. Very striking. Very well.
Excellent. Well said, everybody. All right, Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okay. For my next magic trick, I'm going to put up Frank's piece. And he's going to hit the button. And we're going to hear him speak.
They said that deep within the village of Hampton roams a shadowy spirit, condemned to the daunting torment of the ominous New England curse, haunting the restless nights of the howling winds blowing forthwith, wending with a crimson stake through her bleeding heart. The feeble, bent, starving, and fragile figure is seen by the local peasants, who descry her ashen bones at walk with a visible gait and walking stick, the piercing and greedy ebony eyes radiate a sudden glow of terror. A loud wailing is heard from beyond the woods on to the sea. She was once accused of a wicked perversion of witchcraft. The persecution was the unjust righteousness of hypocrites, whose testimonies of falsehood slandered her name forever. Reviled by the serpent's tongue, the Puritans in their disguise. Her imprisonment was a dreadful grip of shackles, of shame she bore, confined to the lone cemetery of the plutonium pit of hell that doomed her. But her windy whispers echo the grating sound of her eerie voice. For you can hear her calling out your name.
No! No! No!
Great read, Frank. Thank you very much for Soundcraft. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam, you get to kick it.
All right. Well, that was a wonderful read he did. I love the imagery in this. I like how he takes us into that classic historical dark rite. It has a very epic feel to it. I like how he brings us into the story of a time of where New England was the Salem witch trials, where women were easily persecuted for being different, and how, you know, easily accused of witchcraft. I like the imagery and her feeble, bent, starving, and fragile figures seen by the local peasants, and she was once accused of the wicked perversion of witchcraft. Her persecution was the unjust righteousness of hypocrites. Wonderful lines there, and I like how he brings us into this dark tale of revenge and that spirit that everybody sees and knows the legend of. So excellent writing, very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean, how about you?
Well, I think Frank did a fabulous job, as always, you know, with this write. I think that this is like one of his, this is his primary niche, I think, is the dark light. Just a really well done piece, and I think it was just had that real eerie note to it in the audio, and I think it was just wonderful. Great job, Frank, as always, and thanks for sharing that with us, for sure. Excellent work.
Nice, Gene. Thank you. And Thomas, how about you?
Hi. Pieces which read it around a campfire late at night or on a Halloween evening and completely destroy half the audience and make them impossible for them to get any sleep. Great description of feeble bent, starting and fragile. Figure is seen by the peasants. And, her persecution was unjust, righteous of hypocrites. Came across an interesting piece of history was that a large percentage of the women who were accused of witches and persecuted at the Salem witch trials happened to be the ones who owned property. And the men did not like the idea of women owning property. I think the way he brings us into that last paragraph, not only is it a nice, care of as far as web image in the last paragraph, but it's a fitting punishment. All those who reviled her, slandered her name forever, deserve what they got. Very well done.
Excellent. Thank you, everybody. There is a note to how easily one with a voice can actually contain a whole village into a singular thought of that which is coming. The devil is here. You must beware. There are witches in our midst. You must beware. And there is a note going back about 1,000 years of there were times when they thought witchcraft was around, but it has been some of that where vampirism and werewolfism and all that stuff came from might have been on the shadow of thought of villagers who ate rye, because that was a main staple back then. And when there was a cold snap, the rye itself would be infected with ergamot, and that is the underlying pinnings of LSD, which everybody got to eat back then. And there were thoughts of the idea of seeing things and knowing things beyond the realm because you were hallucinating in the moment, and the whole village went that route. But this kind of walks on another level of just totally believing into that sort of what used to be characterized as performing miracles, then got bastardized into the thought of, it's witchcraft, it's evil, instead of, hey, I can heal somebody. Well, you must be one of the demons born. You can produce natural remedies which heal. Well, you're a demon born. And this all hit on a thought of life being so constrained that these girls needed a sense of being something. So they lied. Nicely done, Frank. Thank you. All right, Gene. Rebecca, to you.
Okay. I only have a minute and a half, and I wanted to get one more poem in. Anybody feel like hanging around just a moment? I would appreciate it.
Yeah.
Okay, let me grab it. Let me grab it. Oh, God. Anyway. Yeah, you know it. Is with that. Okay, give me a second. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so slow. Okay. Got it. I'm sorry. Okay, copy. Yeah, I gotta find the VMI. Oh, God, this is getting complicated. Always that last minute subject.
Oh.
Okay, this one here is by Mr. M. It's called Language Soul. So let me
push that button.
This is my recital of Languid Soul. As a child, I was defiled, surrounded by pain and death. Feeling exiled and reviled, I began to loathe every breath. Born of lust, masked distrust, emerging as a child of shame. Having to adjust to utter disgust in the place from where I came. Blood and booze seemed to ooze out of the poverty-ridden street. Gangs and crews with nothing to lose had assisted in my self-defeat. Seems every day they'd find a way to punish me for being unique. Cyclical decay led me astray, dwindling my desire to speak. Losing my friends to violent trends of the up-and-coming criminal. This man descends, sadness it rends, but I try to keep it minimal. Try as I might, the relentless plight eventually had driven me cold. No will to fight the perpetual blight and its frigid, oppressive hold. Time cannot heal the pain that I feel, the result of sorrow's corruption. Fate will reveal this tragic ordeal has led to my miserable destruction.
Great read, Robert. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Pam.
Yeah, that was a beautiful read. This has great rhyme and flow. It's raw. It hits hard. It's emotionally like a punch in the gut. It's so too much of a reality for too many people and too many children who are not only, their problems are ignored, but they're dealing with rejection, with violence, and they're dealing with all these emotions that, turmoil around in their spirit because this really hits hard all the way through. But I especially was drawn to losing my friends to violent trends of the ups and coming criminals. This man descends, sadness it rends, but I try to keep it minimal. And then time cannot heal the pain that I feel, the result of sour's corruption. Fate will reveal this tragic ordeal has led to my miserable destruction. Like I said, the lines really hit hard in how the environment a child is raised in often follows them into adulthood. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Jean?
Well, I have to say that, I like this piece by Robert. It was painful and well-penned. It's always an incredible read and write from him. I find it to always, it's always like something that kind of hits home or touches base in one fashion or another. But I thought there was great imagery throughout, and it was just really a prime piece. So thank you, Robert, for sharing with us tonight. Absolutely.
Thank you, Jean. And Thomas, how about you?
He takes the part of childhood, not only born out of wedlock, but born as a matter of born of lust, so probably rape, who happens to be probably intelligent, inclined, but not fitting into the general form of the street. Seems every day it's punishing for being mean. So what's good about you and special becomes nothing but another source of your own destruction. So that by the time you get that last line, all you can do is nod in agreement. Builds a really powerful case for hell in the real world destroys just as much as it does in the one that promises to get you through things. And he does a great job of it. He didn't get so just wax into purple. Getting military to the point. song and the way the rhyme works and the beat in the poem. But quite
impressive. Excellent. Great comment there, Tom. Thank you. I think the language soul up top kind of hits on that notion hard. And there is an abiding essence, even though one made it out of this environment alive, what still languishes upon that soul is everything that came along with it in order to get out of that, survive that environment, which holds on to the point that it's very deep within and sits with the idea, hey, even with my salvation, so to speak, it still has a way of haunting me to the point of not being able to walk past the initiality of that life itself. Hard-edged. Thank you, Mr. M. All right, Jean.
Okay, well, I want to say what a great show, everybody. Wonderful poetry. I have a few carryovers for next week. And, with that 4 or 5, so I'll be putting up a board tonight. And anyone who didn't hear their piece tonight, I apologize, and check us out next Friday. Thank you, Rex, for co-hosting with me as always. Pam, Thomas, thanks so much for calling in and hanging with us. I hope everyone has a good night and a great weekend. And, we will definitely revisit this topic next week.
Take care.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Thomas. Good night, Rex. Good night, Pam. Thank you.